Hi, everybody, and welcome to Context Countdown. I'm Andrew Kripko, and I'll be going over five recent news stories that need to be placed in context. Some of them are misleading, while others are spot on. But either way, there's a context behind them, and I'm here to tell you what's really going on. Let's take a look at our top five countdown for the week. At number five, we have the raucous troublemakers in Times Square, be they bare-chested and provocative women or aggressive costume-donning panhandlers who are causing quite the stir in the heart of the Big Apple. So guys, not sure if you've been following in the news or not, but Times Square has gotten pretty out of control this past year. Well, the first thing that's been drawing people's attention was the costume panhandlers aggressively beating some people up and intimidating others for money. Now, tourists would take pictures of their children with, let's just say, Elmo or Spider-Man, only to have the person underneath the costume harass them for even more money. And, like I said, at times, those very same children had to witness their favorite heroes assaulting other people. Now, as you may have expected, this has caused quite the stir in New York City. But not many individuals outside of there even know anything about this. New Yorkers started complaining, but they were informed by the police that they can't really do anything, since these panhandlers can technically wear whatever they want and walk around wherever they want without any legal consequences. So that's the first problem, the aggressive costume-wearing panhandlers that the city doesn't know how to deal with. But the second one is rather new, and let me tell you about this. And it's already generated a storm of attention since it was reported on earlier this month. There are street performers, if you can call them that, called desnudas, which are basically bare-breasted women with their chest painted who go around getting paid to take pictures of people. It's dirty, it's low class, it's scandalous, but it defines everything that is out of control with popular culture in the U.S. Now, about these desnudas, as they're being called, it turns out that they're managed, or if you ask me, basically pimped by the same man who a New York Post investigation revealed even sends his pregnant girlfriend out on the street to make money. Even worse, some of these women are being groped for money, thereby turning America's most recognized corner into an open-air strip club, basically. Now about these desnudas, the city says that they don't support the business, but they're incapable of stopping it. And they cite a previous court order where a judge said that any woman can be bare-chested in New York City, wherever a man can be too. So that includes public places like Times Square. But New York Mayor Bill de Blasio said he might have the pedestrian plazas there removed and the area reconverted back into an actual thoroughfare for traffic. And this would deter those unsavory activities from occurring there and from giving the city a bad reputation. But still, if you ask me, these episodes are emblematic of the American dream gone wild, where aggressive individuals can hide behind the costumes of their favorite children's heroes and panhandle for a living. And on the same token, well, on the other same side of the street, a woman could publicly bare her naked chest and strut around in tight underwear in Times Square, all to make a quick buck. Power of the dollar. The next one up is Obama's apology to Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, who was furious after WikiLeaks revealed a few weeks ago that the U.S. was spying on its most important and loyal Asian allies. So folks, you know, we followed the beginning of this story when it first broke a few weeks ago, so it's only right that I give you an update about it right now. Like I told you before, WikiLeaks released documents proving that the U.S. spied on Japan, its primary Asian ally, and that the fallout of this scandal could be particularly embarrassing for the U.S. as it tries to pivot to Asia and push the TPP. Now, Joe Biden, he had earlier called Abe to apologize, but that just wasn't enough, since Abe wanted the U.S.'s top boss to do the exact same thing. So along comes Obama, who picks up the phone and makes that call, expressing what the media terms regret for the incident. Well, he didn't officially acknowledge that it occurred, mind you, but he did end up saying that he regrets that it occurred, or at least this is what the press is reporting. Well, what does he regret? That the U.S. got caught? Well, we can go into polemics all day and night about this because it's so uncouth for the U.S. to spy on its main allies, let alone Japan, a country which values privacy and respect and takes it to a very high level of its culture. And actually, this is why Obama had to go through the fake and totally scripted motions of an apology, because the Japanese people were so taken aback by this betrayal. They trusted the U.S., and especially Obama personally, who talks such high rhetoric about returning to Asia and pivoting to help friends and all this other sort of nonsense. And what did they get? Well, they got an intelligence pivot, proving for that at least the past 7 or 8 years, likely much longer, but that's all that WikiLeaks could prove. Even before the pivot, the U.S. had been spying on Japan. What a betrayal. Guys, this story, therefore, does have a glimmer of hope, however, even if it is only superficial at this point. It shows that if the people are angry enough, and the U.S. needs the country's cooperation enough, that it will go through the fake motions of an apology. Now, that's not much to hope for, but here's what is. If this is taken to its conclusion, and I mean people not accepting the fake apology, but voting against lawmakers or voting instead for opposition or new parties, going to the streets and raising attention and doing all sorts of these things, it might get too big for the domestic politicians to ignore. It won't change whatever transgression was that was previously committed, but it'll pressure the government into maybe making concessions, some type of tangible action other than an apology. And this whole incident shows how important Japan is for U.S. policy and how bad the U.S. needs the Japanese public to agree to the pivot to Asia and the TPP, since Obama would actually not have apologized had he not needed something from the Japanese. Now, I want to just conclude by saying that I hope the Japanese wake up and see this for what this is really is, because the U.S. and Japan, this, guys, is an explicit colonial relationship in the 21st century. I hope the Japanese see it, because I sure do. Third in our countdown is the anti-drone ammunition that's being marketed to Americans that are fed up with having their privacy violated by these flying cameras. A company called Snake River Shooting Products has just introduced a new line of ammunition, anti-drone bullets, just in time for when this new technology gets ready to literally take off around America. Well, there have been some publicized reports of drones violating people's privacy, spying on their children, and just being a plain nuisance. Well, to those Americans that have had enough of this, or just want to be on the safe side, they can now buy this anti-drone ammunition to help with their swatting away of the pest, if you will. Well, mosquitoes have bug spray, but drones have anti-drone bullets, it seems. But there is a very, very big catch, and it's that in many municipalities, it is illegal to discharge a firearm in most instances. So, people shouldn't get ready to shoot down their neighbor's drones just yet. In fact, doing so could lead to a fine and/or prison time depending upon the local law, and the company does warn its prospective customers about this and that they do need to abide by local laws. So, that's the gist of this anti-drone ammo product, but what's it all mean and what's the context behind it? Well, guys, this is Context Countdown, so let me tell you. First off, drones have become ever more present in America's skies, and as more and more citizens buy the technology for whatever use they intend to have for it, this is only going to become ever more prevalent. Of course, with all the NSA spying revelations and Americans' historical concern for privacy as it is, this has put many people on the defensive and has made them more conscious of being spied on and watched. But guys, it's one thing to have your email secretly read and your phone conversation surreptitiously listened in on. But when you see a hunk of metal flying above your yard, that's going to get just about anyone feeling nervous and antsy. With a large percentage of the population already owning firearms, this seems like the perfect mix. Combine gun owners and pro-privacy advocates with anti-drone ammo and just blow the machines out of the sky. Now, what I think is going to happen is this. You'll see a few cases of people shooting down drones, but they'll probably get in trouble for violating whatever civil ordinance it is regulating the discharge of firearms in their neighborhood. A few of these cases will make rounds on the internet, and more people will get nervous. They'll probably think that the government doesn't care if private citizens spy on one another, since after all, the government's doing the same thing to everybody else through the NSA. Overall, I think it'll increase the acrimony towards the authorities and make people more apathetic of the overall political process. I don't see any way in which the government, no matter which level it is, will simply allow citizens to shoot drones down in their neighborhoods. I think the company means well, as do the people that purchase this, but the government's reaction to its use will be the exact opposite. Our runner-up is the outlandish border fence that Estonia plans to spend 71 million euros building along the Russian border. Now, folks, I find this to be laughable, because Estonia just announced that they'll be building a border fence with Russia to supposedly keep the Russians out. Well, guys, this absurd project will be 108 kilometers long, or about 67 miles, and this is almost half of the border's entire length. It'll begin in a couple years in 2018 and cost 71 million euros, or $81 million, in order to create. This monstrous project is going to have video cameras, drones, and a 6-foot-tall wall. Supposedly, they say, this is to keep Russian illegal immigrants out. But it's very peculiar, since Estonia is the one that's actually losing its population, not Russia. This Baltic state lost over 10% of its population since independence, and it's because of low birth rates and immigration elsewhere. So if you have a country that's obviously in the demographic decline, big time actually, and it's walling itself off from the larger neighbor that could foreseeably help it economically, well, what do you have? You have a country that's kind of gone a little bit nuts, if you ask me. Now, they could have close neighborly relations with Russia, but this is just wishful thinking, because the Estonian Zeitgeist is absolutely opposed to this type of partnership. As most of you probably already know by now, Estonia is one of the most vocal and hysterically anti-Russian countries in the world, and their screaming and shouting is likely influenced by its demographic and territorial inferiority complex, especially the one it feels towards Russia. I think the whole thing is silly when you really think about it, because small states can work with big states without a problem. After all, Estonia loves cooperating with the US, for example. But with Russia, Estonia has let revisionist history get the best of it, as homage is paid to former Nazis that fought against the Soviets, and the country's textbooks preach a very anti-Russian message. I find it absurd that the Estonian government is trying to convince people that Russia will invade, because first off, Estonia is in NATO, so it'll set off a dangerous chain reaction of global military escalation. And secondly, what does Russia or its military need Estonia for? I mean, it's obvious how much Estonians hate Russians nowadays, so you can't just occupy them. And secondly, modern military advances mean that Russia can counter whatever supposed threat Estonia is in each and every spectrum. But I do need to say, Estonia's hosting of American military forces does create a very real complication. It's almost like a provocation. But all of this is beside the point, as the border fence doesn't solve any of it. And it just looks like a paranoid and delusional action by an unstable and scared government. This is aimed more at the people of Estonia than it is aimed at Russia, since its only purpose is to reinforce anti-Russian paranoia at the expense of millions of dollars and euros that its declining population will have difficulty paying for as it is. Now, one last thing, I think it's a shame when you think about it, because you have a people whose minds are held captive by their government's policies, and more, Estonia is looking like a manifestation of Orwell's greatest fears. At our top spot, we've got Ukraine celebrating its independence, which in today's terms is really its colonial subordination to the United States. So everyone, here's our main story of the week. Ukraine was celebrating its independence, and this got me thinking. What independence? I mean, how can anyone realistically call Ukraine an independent state at this point? Sure, it's not a part of the Soviet Union anymore, that much is obvious, but it doesn't mean it's some bastion of sovereignty. Even before Euromaidan, which I'll touch upon in a second, the country was controlled by oligarchs, which are domestic business and criminal interests, basically. It never really operated independently because the government itself couldn't, and quite often it seems, just didn't want to exercise sovereignty. The oligarchs and government were closely connected back then, and this is even worse nowadays. When a small cartel of business interests run a country, that's not sovereignty, that's oligarchy, which is exactly what it was and what it is. Euromaidan made it all worse, because on top of the existing oligarchy, it brought in explicit foreign influence, and by that, I'm referring to the US military presence in the country. American troop and intelligence agents are now a key facet of the post-Maidan order inside of Ukraine. While Kiev argues that this is to protect the country, it's only partially right. It does protect something, alright, but that's the oligarchic interest, not the country's integrity, which is being trampled under American boots. Herein lies the irony. The Kievan leaders are basically American proxies, so they've taken to convincing their people, many of whom are under the sway of virulent anti-Russian propaganda, that the only way to be free from Russia is to be occupied by the US. So, you have the general idea of freedom is occupation, occupation is freedom, which is distinctly dystopian if you ask me. But many people are still buying the rhetoric, which is pretty disturbing. But at the same time, they see what's happening in their country and how it's turned into an economic basket case. For example, folks, since this so-called independence, the country's GDP has dropped a whopping 35%, the worst in the world. The closest that comes to Ukraine is Moldova, another oligarchic state, which dropped 29%. Well, where'd all the money go? Why, in the pockets of the oligarchs. Where else? And these oligarchs now have a militant proxy regime and American boots on the ground to help support them looting their country. The money doesn't get reinvested in Ukraine. It gets sent abroad to foreign banks and is simply just siphoned out of the country. So with all of this going on, the next time someone tells you that Ukraine is independent, remind them of the facts and that the supposed independence is built on current occupation. Freedom is occupation. Occupation is freedom. That's what Ukraine has taught the world in the past year and a half. Alrighty, guys, so this concludes this week's episode of Context Countdown. Thank you, as always, for listening to my show. Hope you have a wonderful weekend and upcoming week, and take care. Bye.